Hello and welcome to a series of specials of my podcast Helium Talk. I call them the isolation episodes, and for these I'm speaking with people from the art world about the current situation we're all facing these days. I just want to know how artists and gallerists from different countries are dealing with being locked down. In today's show I speak with Jonathan Levine from the Jonathan Levine Projects in New Jersey. This is not one of our usual off-the-record episodes. We'll record one of those again soon, but of course there's a lot of talk about potential changes for the art business in this one. So, how are you today?
Hi.
How are things in New Jersey?
You know, it's kind of an existential experience.
Okay.
You know that word? Yeah.
Existential.
So that's probably a German word. seems like a German word.
Like angst.
You know, but it's just like everything's the same. Like I work from home mostly, so yeah. My life isn't really that different, but it's more like this existential idea of what's happening. I mean, like, so everyone in my neighborhood, you know, like, interesting thing is I feel like my communities come more together and everyone's communicating more and they're like less focused on like looking out into the world. I mean, everyone's following the news and everything, but they're really communicating with each other via like I live in a town called Rutherford and we have this Facebook page called the Riot Group, and there's a couple other groups, so everyone's really sharing information and they're kind of like, if anybody needs anything, I'm gonna go to the store. If you have older people here, we can help, you know. I'm like, I see my neighbors if it gets nice out, because it's, you know, I think today's the first day of spring actually. Okay. I think today's the first day of spring. You don't know? Well, if it is, happy fucking spring. Yeah.
It feels like spring.
So,
it's beautiful.
So, you know, but it gets nice out and people want to go outside. So, like, I mean, you can walk around in your neighborhood. They just have to practice social distancing. I mean, every day we wake up and we're not sure what's going to happen yet. And I live just outside of New York City. I can see the skyline from my house, and we have 40% of the cases in the United States are in New York. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have quite a few here in New Jersey. So every day you wake up and you're waiting for because the laws change every day. Like they're shutting more and more and more stuff down. We're just waiting for them to, you know, put this order, or they're calling it shelter at home. But so every day things are changing. I mean, the basic essentials are, you know, you can go to the grocery store, and there's certain real basic things you can do, but I think those things will continue to change. I mean, you have to be able to get food. I remember that they were like saying maybe only 50 people at a time could go into the grocery store. I don't remember. I always go really late at night, so to my grocery store, because it's open till like 12, but now it's open till 11. The governor put in like a suggested curfew of 8 o'clock. So my life though isn't really different, because all I do is like kind of work from home. But I used to have this option where I could, you know, I like to socialize. So I'd go over to my friend's house. I'd go out to a bar. You know, bars are all closed. Bars are closed. Restaurants are only taking, you could stop by for take, you know, you can get takeout. They just closed. I don't know why they didn't do this sooner. Like barbershops and nail salons. Retail stores are strangely still open. I mean, they would have locked everything down. It also occurred to me that you and I are in a completely – we're outside of the typical – what we do for a living and how we work is completely outside the structure of what most people do. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's going to affect me or not. I mean, I'm assuming it will, but I don't know. I mean, there's all sorts of concerns and worries, but at the end of the day, I'm healthy. All I got to do is be sure that I have enough money in my bank account to buy food, and everything else can go to the wind. And I'm not going to worry about paying my mortgage or any of those things. You know, they're supposedly the government's going to be giving us all these like stimulus packages, blah, 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 blah. All I care about is like, I'm not even thinking about that stuff. I'm just like, do I have enough money in my account to get me through 6 months to buy food? That's it. Everything else, who gives a shit? Like, you don't pay your mortgage? no one's going to, they're going to probably put a freeze on mortgages and all sorts of other things. So, you know, that's kind of how I'm thinking at it about this point in time. I'm concerned for my parents because they're older. Mm-hmm. I won't be visiting them.
Sure. Yeah.
But you know, you and I, you know, it's a fallacy that if you're over, what are you, 52? And I'm 51. Yes. So, you know, we are less susceptible to die from this virus, but it's still possible. And if you have any kind of underlying conditions, I mean, they're coming up with different reports. People in their 30s and, you know, 40s or young people didn't think they had an issue are getting sick and dying. And a lot of times they have underlying health issues they don't even know about. Like if you're a smoker, you have more susceptibility to it. Maybe you have diabetes or something. Who knows? Maybe you have, there's all these different things they're saying. So it's not that what was being said, it wasn't really completely accurate in regards to if you're under a certain age, you don't have to worry. But then, you know, we have these idiots on running around on spring break in Florida. Like, I mean, I could really go off on my government, you know, I'll put this out here. we don't really talk about politics on this show. And, you know, I'm going to put this out there. I'm not afraid of losing listeners, viewers or whatever, but I'm not a Trump fan. I think Trump's a fucking idiot. And I always have. So, and I think he's been a horrible president, the worst president ever. And not even, you know, I wouldn't even say because I'm like, I'm a Democrat. I'm a moderate Democrat. Very socially left though. My issue with it isn't with Trump because he's a Republican. My issue with this Trump is he's just a really bad person. He's like got mental health issues and he's got a personality disorder and he's just not a good person, you know. He's like, and you know, it's like he's a total narcissist and the worst thing ever. So like this guy's kind of, I think, fuck things up for us more because he wasn't prepared. He didn't take this seriously. He's been giving out the wrong information, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, that's what I got to say about that.
Yeah, well, I think this is the situation. It's a similar situation all around the world, and I think you are in a worse situation than Germany because of Donald Trump, because you don't have politics that kind of work now, right now, and understand it in time. Here in Germany, of course, things have not closed down immediately as well, but you know, sort of kind of have to, you know, there's a learning curve in that. We're here in Germany, the first state, Bavaria, has just put the whole state under lockdown, so people have to stay home. There are certain rules, they can still go out, you know, they can go to work if they must. They are encouraged to go outside and for a run or for a stroll, for a walk, get some fresh air, but only with the family that you're living with in the house, so I'm household, things like that. I think when you read through all of this, it sounds super dramatic, and in a way, socially it is, but it is all understandable that they're taking these measures. But well, we don't have spring break right now, but we have young people who do corona parties, who meet outside. We have bars who say, what the fuck, and we're just opening illegally, stuff like that. That is in the end, that's the problem that leads to, you know, so like the states making a shutdown, because, you know, sort of most people behave properly, but the ones that
endangering others. You just can't have public gatherings, you know. Like I went to a client's house last night and picked up a painting and brought it back. I had dinner with them. I was a little concerned. I was like, you guys worried? They're like, no, we're fine. And I've been going out into the world as I need to. Like I had to go to the post office, I had to go to the grocery store. I basically walk into a store. I clean my hands before I go in. And the minute I walk out, I clean my hands again. I get into my car and I wipe everything down with disinfectant. So like, this is what I did. I'm like, I went to three different stores. It was this constant like thing I was doing, you know, because I don't want to get sick, but I don't want to get anybody sick. I could be sick and I don't know it, you know? My parents and I had been away. We went away to Florida a couple weeks ago, just as this thing was starting to ramp up. So we fly down, right? And we live in New Jersey and we fly to Florida. It's like a 2.5 hour trip. And, you know, we're there and it's kind of escalating. But, you know, there's only a few cases in the States. So, you know, I was out drinking every night, doing my vacation thing. I had Purell with me the whole time. When we got on the plane, my mother's a total worrier. My mother's a very typical Italian-American mother. Worries about everything, right? Both my parents had a little cold, too. So as soon as we get on the plane, we have like this big bag of disinfectant wipes and we like wipe everything down we could possibly wipe down, you know. It's hilarious. And, you know, so then 7 days go by and it's time to go. We weren't even sure if we were going to be able to get a flight. We were fine. They did the same thing. And my parents, though, were getting more sick. And this is before we really knew my mother in particular. My mother had a heart attack last year, so she's got heart problems. She's a small woman, and she's got, you know, heart problems, heart disease. So, you know, we're always worried about her because she's got she's not strong. So her body's not as strong, and she's on all this medication, everything that actually does that kind of makes it – helps it, but also kind of makes it weaker. As soon as we got home, and this thing's getting – every day it's accelerating – in the news, my parents went and got a corona. They got a corona test, and I came home and I self quarantined half the week because I wasn't sure. I was like, I don't want to get anybody sick, and it took days. They got the test on Wednesday, and wasn't until Saturday that they were able to say, no, we don't have it. I didn't think they did because they were congested and all that, and that's really not what the coronavirus is. It's like a fever and dry.
A lot of people simply have a cold around this time of year.
We didn't know. And I don't know. The whole thing's been kind of surreal. I think, again, it's existential. Mm-hmm. It's the idea of like, I'm stuck in my house. I live by myself. So that has challenges.
Yeah, I think the challenge is just more or less about to start. I mean, here the schools are closed and people are mostly at home, of course. Kids still run around. Playgrounds are all closed since Monday, I think, already, which also makes sense. But there's still activities that you can do with your children. You're supposed to, you know, sort of just stay as a family together. Melvin is at home right now. His girlfriend is still in Spain. She's coming back on this weekend. So maybe then we have 5 people living in our small apartment in Hamburg. Who knows?
Aren't you up at your your country house?
No, unfortunately not. I was at the country house until Sunday, and for 2 weeks there were school holidays in Hamburg, so we were there with Melvin, Yvonne, and I. So that was basically the best place to be already.
The schools
at that time.
Are closed, right? Your schools are closed, correct? Okay, I'm assuming there.
But, you know, so Yvonne still had to work, you know, so she had to get back on Wednesday together with Melvin. And so they went back earlier. I was there until Sunday. So I basically just returned on Sunday. And now the dramatic things for us is that it's a different state. Hamburg is a city state. It's just like a small state within Germany. And Schleswig-Holstein, where our house is basically bordering to this. And it's a holiday region like this. It's the Baltic Sea and the North Sea. And there are islands and the islands. Islands have been closed off this week for tourism. Now the whole state is closed for tourism, you know, where my house is, my farm is. And they don't want people from Hamburg to go there right now. So now legally I can still go to my house. You know, I can still go. I got property, it's my house. And of course there are things to do, be done. But for us, we wanted to go there actually yesterday, and we decided to wait it out a little bit. Because we're not even in the village, but we're part of a small village. We're completely outside and remote. I mean, we don't see anyone except maybe the farmer who's a friend of ours and stuff like that. But, there's a legal standpoint that we can go there. There's a moral standpoint that we don't want to put pressure on these small communities out there. Their biggest fear is that if people get sick, that their hospitals and stuff is not big enough. That's the point right now. So we want to be wanted. But we also probably have to go there at some point because there are things you have to do at the house because we're renovating it. When I was there, the wind, we had these big severe storms, and we have this this roof made out of straw, you know, and we just fixed it this summer, and there was a part that was blown out. And if you don't do that, you know, in, you know, sort of on time, then you basically can redo a whole, the half of the roof after a week. So things like that. So we kind of, there will be a point where we have to go up there, but we're still undecided whether we're going to do that or not, probably next week. And if we can, if we still can. My advantage though is that I can still go to the gallery, which is also my studio. It's my workplace. Which I own, so I can sit on the bike and go here right now anyway, but even if they put us on lockdown, I can go to work here because I don't have another studio. I can't work at home. You know, my art I can't do at home. And right now, for me, the biggest issue is actually, and I think that's for a lot of people, is the financial side. Because we all had to close and cancel exhibitions. I mean, you know, I've been writing on the book, but Melvin was planning this big exhibition on April 3rd, which is out of the window, and we've already invested into that. You know, the drill, yeah. You know, you have shipping, yeah. So you have stuff like that. I canceled Artsy last year, so my online presence right now, which we wanted to change within the first month, but, you know, so with patience and stuff like, we had time to do that, is terrible right now, you know, and we've been planning to do something. So I actually have more work to do than before to keep the business running and keep alternative ways of keeping the business running, because now, you know, I'm back into the responsibility also for other artists again. We have work from other artists. It's my obligation to try and sell some work for them because they don't make any money as well.
You mean for this exhibition you guys were about to do?
No, the exhibition. Yeah, there's still some work probably coming for this show, but Melvin and I. That's a good thing is about that. My gallery manager and I, we live in the same place basically for the last 22 years, or last 20 years. So we can work from home. We can also work from here, and we made some plans for some interesting exhibitions. But that also like means we right now there's a lot of work. I'm pretty sure there's the existential. Point for I think many galleries that we talked about this a lot. You know, there's a lot of galleries who rely upon even the smallest amount of income.
It occurred to me, I was having this conversation with one of my old employees in terms of the business, is a lot of people are about to go out of business. A lot of people are about to shut down. And I shouldn't say this, but I am anyway, because I think that there's a lot of people that were probably struggling anyway. And this could be kind of a blessing for them where they could kind of like the worst thing is to close your business. And
because you're failing.
Right. And it's like it's pride, you know. Like I remember when I was kind of finally closed my gallery, it's like, oh my God, I'm so, and I was just holding on for so long because, you know, it's pride. And you know, like I failed, blah, blah. I didn't fail. I had a great run, you know, like shit changed, whatever. But of course I was beating myself up and that was really emotionally difficult for me in so many ways. Mm-hmm. But you know, like for example, what's going to happen is like one of the big issues that people don't seem to realize. Like, I remember when I had my business, we'll go back to the gallery talk. I had a lease and I had a couple leases and these leases are ironclad and you just can't walk away from them. Now, in a situation like this, you can do whatever you want. No one's coming after you after this. You could just be like, you know what? I'm shutting my business down today because no one's ever going to come after you for this. Everyone's being hurt.
Well,
just the way it goes.
Yeah, but that's probably not really necessarily the argument here, because for one, we know that people now pretend a lot of, you know, sort of people say now all these social things and all these nice things, but when this is over, greed will be back. And social distancing now means that you try to keep away from humankind on any level, but at some point social distancing will be again, I'm fucking rich and you're poor. You know, so these things will come back. It's only human. I think we have an opportunity that these things change, but I think right now, if you walk away from your lease, I think everybody will say, okay, that's fine. Don't talk, let's not deal with this. But I think then you have to probably at some point really walk away and not come back.
That's my point. What is, I mean, you're walking away from it, you're closing your business, and that's it, you're done, you're out, because like that's what a lot of people are going to have to do, and like thousands of people are going to be doing this, like our economy is like, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of screwed. I mean, I don't want to be all negative because I think actually, you know, we've had the Spanish flu was worse than this, and sure. Some other things were too. And, you know, I'm sitting here and it's not like we're living in some third world country where like somewhere in the Middle East in the middle of a fucking war or something. And, you know, we have to deal with like, we've got running water and all this. Like, you know, you might be stuck in your house. Hopefully you've got some food. Hopefully you have some friends. I know there's going to be people out there who have a hard time. They don't have any money to buy food. So yeah, you know, and hopefully the community can step up. But I mean, we're way better prepared for this. Everyone's just kind of like, I'm stuck in my house. I don't know what I'm going to do about this and that. And it's like, when you live in a first world country, you're having like, they say first world problems. I really don't think it's not like, listen, in the 20s and 30s, at a good years, they didn't have the kind of things we have. People are like, there's nothing in the grocery store. It's like, are you kidding me? There's just tons of food in the grocery store. So there's no paper and there's no.
Yeah. I think the Dutch prime minister yesterday, because he got a little bit pissed that everybody's buying and everywhere around the world is buying toilet paper. Now he's just said, we got enough toilet paper in Netherlands to shit for 10 years.
None of that bothered me. I always buy toilet paper. Yeah, exactly.
Let's get back to the gallery talk, because that's probably the stuff that everybody can hear. And my idea behind these shorter talks with people from around the world is to hear about the impact of this for exhibitions and galleries and stuff like
people
that.
It's going to force people to go more online, but it's also at this stage, you're kind of like, I mean, I have a bunch, you know what, I've had this conversation with a couple of friends who, other galleries, it's too soon to say. I'll throw some concepts out there that I think could potentially happen, and I just want to preface this, I could be totally wrong. It could be that because the stock market is so bad, and it's that people who have a lot of money continue to have a lot of money, and people who have a lot of money will continue to buy art. And so a couple things could happen. They could start looking into buy art as an investment, but not necessarily emerging artists, or not necessarily primary market artists that are a lot of stuff that we deal in. That's one thing that happened. Another thing that happened is people might want to start selling off their collections because they need money. So that could be something that's happening. I think that the primary market that you and I are involved in, we've been involved in, is going to be hurt because it's already hurting anyway. And it's not necessarily like these aren't great investments. I think that you may see artists change their prices. You may see them do very desperate things that they would never do that we would never accept, think was acceptable. People are desperate. So I think that there's probably some silver lining in this, but there's probably not. It's going to be tough. But you know what? You're an artist. It's tough for everyone. Like, you know, maybe you have an online presence and you're able to still eat, buy and sell thing. But what about the millions of people that are bartenders and servers and all these other jobs they've lost their jobs. So I think actually probably being an artist right now is, I don't think it's worse. Might even be better for a lot of people. You know, I mean, hard to say, really hard to say.
Yeah. I had this talk with a couple of artists, and one thing is, I think artists are used to work in isolation.
That's right.
and they're used to not having a regular income every month. But of course, this is an impact that I spoke with a couple of artists who just canceled, had their shows canceled, and they have all this work standing around. And some shows will not be postponed, but will probably happen next year. And this can decide over careers.
Well, you know what? I'm going to throw this out there. If there was that big of a demand for their work, they will be able to sell it. So they won't have their exhibition. Who cares?
But the whole online thing, I think that's an issue. Everybody, of course, is trying to steer towards online, but we both know online is a fraction of the market, of the sales of every gallery. It's still the point artist.
It's a fraction. Online's a fraction.
Online
sales is where that's where it all is. That's where it is for me. Not for you?
For emerging artists. For you, a secondary market work, of course. But artsy. I mean, big galleries might sell through artsy and stuff like that. I mean, I think there's still not the big and the wide acceptance for people to buy art online.
But see, I think we might have a different opinion of that.
But do you still? But I mean, okay, you're basically just doing online right now.
Yeah, but you know what? What I'll say is this is. I thought I've said this before. When I had my gallery in New York City, when I finally moved it and closed it to Jersey, and I moved to Jersey City, at that point in time, I was doing 90% of all my sales online. And the frustration, I've never said this to you.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, it's just like in this situation, it's you. And now, in that situation, it's you and a few other galleries who have maybe a strong collector basis and a strong basis of people buy online. But now what I'm saying is now everybody is like before a fraction of the market, because not every gallery was looking into the online market. Most of the galleries still are brick and mortar. The majority of galleries are still brick and mortar. Artsy has 3,200 galleries. That looks big, but worldwide, things like that. Before it were like 20% of the galleries doing good online sales and being good online. So I mean, a lot of the galleries don't even have a proper online appearance or possibilities to buy the art online. And now everybody's going there.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. It's getting
it's been that way forever. I might be in Germany, it's different than in the US, but all my contemporaries have been solidly online and doing business online. And I do find that the way Europeans do business and Americans do business is different. And there's pros and cons to that. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who's an Italian dealer. I called him. I was like, how you doing? Because, you know, he's in Italy. And he's like, we talked, you know. And Italians like to buy from Italians. And I deal with I have friends in Montreal, and Quebecors like to buy from Quebecors. They don't really buy internationally. But I've had an online presence in all my contemporaries have all had online presence. And I know for a fact that all my collectors – or buying online because I'm reselling their work. I always knew it's like they'd be telling me, I just bought a piece from Corey Helford. I just bought a piece from Mary Karnowski. I just bought a piece from. So for me, that was the case. Anyway,
we're talking about online sales and what I'm talking about is when you go online and want to buy a piece of art, you go and put it in your shopping cart and then you pay by PayPal or credit card and then the shipping is calculated and everything. That's what I mean. Everybody's trying to do that now because there's not so much middlemen. It's like the people that buy art from you online, they it's not like they go online and see, oh, Jonathan has a nice exhibition. All these artists, I don't even know how the works look. You have to admit that most art that we sell online, and I have a good fraction of sales that I do online. I'm not complaining. It's usually art that's being bought by people that know, that have their first Victor Castillo or that have been to an exhibition, that know what to expect. And B, before it was like, it was a good show if I had a certain percentage that went online, even also in the course of the time, because we're not selling at Vernissage openings anymore. We talked about all of that. But now, basically, I try to make my whole revenue through online sales because nobody can come to the space anymore for an unforeseeable time. And that's different for most galleries. That's what I mean with brick and mortar.
Here, this is where all the business is happening right here. There's a little lonely plant. There's some a little sculpt.
But that's your special situation.
You know, like this is it. There's a James Marshall print on the wall. This is it, man. But this is how it is these days.
I think the behavior has to change not on the gallery side, but on the buyer side. People have to, you know, how hard it is to convince people to buy anything and buy anything online as well. A lot of people out there who occasionally buy a piece of art and it would be important for the especially the smaller and mid-level galleries. They say, oh, wow, it's a meter by meter 50. That cannot be sent by mail, right? Or then you come with the shipping costs. You know, I mean, we have nice work and we ship it and then we sell work online, for example, in the United States to experienced buyers that don't fall off their chairs when they say, oh, their work is like 1,000 euros. And that's nice. And they say, oh, shipping is 300. They're what? why is it so expensive? Or 500 maybe even, you know, people
you have
to
be
make
like, you
these
know
experiences
what?
Now.
Well, that's a beginning buyer. That's somebody who's not, you know, doesn't have experience.
Most people are beginning buyers online because our market is not set up for online sales in the dimensions that are needed and required now. In this
you're saying,
situation.
Oh, you're saying that's your experience because the experience I have is not that, you know, most, don't get me wrong. I have people who inquire all the time and they're just tire kickers, but you know, I have certain collectors, by the way, I can't see your face. The screen is all screwy. You know, but you know, most of my collectors or people that I'm dealing with, you know, they know what the story is. They're collectors. So, I mean, you're doing this for 25 years, you know, and I do get, you know, I can't say that's not the experience that I have on a regular basis.
But you have to admit it's not the regular case. All I'm saying,
I'm not sure,
Jonathan,
actually. It's the thing.
I'm pretty sure. And then you can also go to the online reports from big companies who do that, and PricewaterhouseCoopers and everybody, USB, the bank, who says this. It's a big online marketplace, but not for all of them. All I'm saying is, online sales, yes, they do happen. And maybe you have a business that runs nicely with online sales. But that is not the case of 100% of the galleries. What I'm saying now, and maybe that's the point where the misunderstanding is. My point is now, let's say 20% or 25% or 30% of the galleries have successful online sales such as you. I'm privileged that I have online sales. I could not survive on online sales. But other galleries don't even have any online sales because they're not set up. So now, instead of 30% of galleries being successful with online sales, 100% of the galleries try to get into one market that is online, which means we need to educate the clients because there's still 70% of the people who don't buy online. Now, these 70% supposed to buy also. So that, like, all the galleries who have closed exhibitions now and say, oh, we do an online exhibition. Now it's everything online. They probably, most of them have probably never sold a work online. That's what I mean. Behavior
well,
has
I
to
have
change.
To say,
now.
Like, it's funny because I don't really see it that. I mean, I can't imagine you having a get.
So 100% of all galleries sell online.
They should be.
They should be, but then not doing.
If you're not, you're not doing it right. Like, I can't imagine any business, right?
I don't know. No, I think we totally disagree on this point. It's like when you have a brick and mortar gallery, when you have a gallery, look, take our friend. Let's take this on a personal level. Take our friend Ralf Krüger, Feinkunstkrüger. He has a very successful gallery in Hamburg. His openings are always very crowded. He sells at these openings to people that he knows in personal contact. At least 99% of his sales are offline. He's a great gallerist. He does this for almost 25 years as well. He's in the market for a long time. He has all these great artists that he's working with. He's experienced, but he does not sell online because he had never needed to. Now this is a gallery that has to. And Ralf is not the exception. Ralf is, I think, globally, worldwide, it's standard that galleries are not prepared to sell, make their whole complete revenue online. All I'm saying is now you have to try to get all the money that you usually make with an exhibition where people come and buy. These people that come and buy, you have to educate to buy even though they're not coming. And that's a thing that's not...
I guess, you know, again, I think for me here in the U.S., every gallery here has an online presence. And not in 2005.
But do they do the sales?
Yes.
They need right now.
Okay. I would say... The vast majority of galleries that I know and that I deal with have been doing online sales the whole time.
So nothing changes now through the situation that everybody's
No, they're just selling. I think they're selling less. And I mean, the whole thing of it is the big issue now, and we've always talk about this, is that there's an oversaturation of market. Artists are selling direct. They're selling from Instagram. Mm-hmm. So that's what's changed the market. It's not so much the online thing. Like if I didn't have an online business, I would have never been able to do what I did. And
but it has been part of your business.
But everyone in my genre did it exactly the same way,
but not 100% or not 90%
in the US. Yeah, pretty much. I can't imagine, like, not one of my competitors, every one of my competitors has a good website, and we could not have been in business for this genre if it wasn't for that. Because imagine I did this for years before I owned a gallery, and I was an independent curator, and I would curate these shows, and I was trying to champion this art that Juxtapose was writing about, and we couldn't sell shit. Stuff now that I could sell for 20 times the amount of money that people are, you know, knocking down my door for a Mark Ryden or whatever, or a Robert Williams or a Todd Shore, or just like a cause, right? I could tell you these stories over and over again. We couldn't sell this work because we didn't have the internet. The minute the internet happened, and the 6 months after I opened my first gallery, and I put this stuff up online, stuff started selling immediately. And by my third year in business, at least half of my sales were online. By the time I got to New York City in 2005, 75% of my sales were online. The most of the time I was in New York, at least 95% of my sales were online. And most of my competitors, it was the same.
Okay, I just believe that's a bold statement that we can't prove in this discussion. But do you think on another level, you just mentioned it, the you just said artists start selling online through Instagram, which also doesn't mean that they're putting an artwork out there, somebody clicks on it and purchases it, puts it in the bag and buys it. But do you think this will increase now? Artists will make new, do you think there will be a different social element between that we've always been talking about, between galleries and artists, that they're getting also cuddling up a little bit more virtually, of course, and that they support their artists in selling, and that they think it's good that artists sell as well, so they keep in business, or that artists go to the galleries and say, here, do more for me? Do you think Instagram sales will increase now?
I don't know. I think people are, I know, I don't think sales are going to increase at all. I think sales are going to be worse because people don't have money. Period.
2008, all over again.
Maybe worse. It's like you're not going to spend your money on buying a $500 painting, or unless you have a lot of people with a lot of money will continue to buy. People with not a lot of money are not going to continue to buy because they have to worry about all of a sudden people are going like,
sure.
I mean, I had a client, I was visiting him, and he's all concerned about it. Stocks now, you know, like stocks just went, whoosh, they just got. Now, that's not to say they're not going to come back. Once this passes, I think the economy will come back strong. I don't think this really changes the business all that much. I just think everybody does worse. Although I do think that in the higher end market, there could be opportunities for secondary market dealers, to be honest with you, and collectors who are looking for this could be a good opportunity for people with a lot of money who are looking for works for less money because like the economy is so now suddenly maybe you're not paying, you know, $1 million for that giant cause painting. Now maybe you're selling it for $750,000 because the market got smaller and people are willing to let that piece go for less. And people with a lot of money are willing to buy it for less because they know the price is going to go back up. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for that. That's the way I'm thinking because that's how I make my business now. But primary market, it's not – you probably don't want to hear me to say this, but I just – it's not a necessity. This is not where you're going to spend your money right now because if you're worried – if you're half the population, you may be 30% of the population might be at a job or you're getting furloughed or you're getting laid off or whatever – you're not spending your money on art. You're saving your money to buy food so you can live, you know, and the story.
Yeah. I think emerging art is very difficult to move now in a situation like this. And of course, secondary market and artists with value, that was the same in 2008. People stopped buying younger emerging artists that were not collector's items at that point, you know? And I think that's, of course, what's happening now as well.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to recover. It's just going to be a hiccup. It might be a year-long hiccup. But you know what? It's good because people have to get perspective. You know, we're sitting around talking about art, right? Who fucking cares about art when you don't have money in your goddamn pocket to fucking eat? So,
it's a luxury segment.
I mean, I'm just in having perspective, you know, like I can't really care too much about the poor artist. Shouldn't I care about the poor bartender or the poor waitress or the poor person who works at retail, these people who, you know, they have no, what are they going to do? You know, so like, I can't really, everyone's out, you know, it's kind of like, got to hunker down and, you know, see what happens. I think, you know, we're, that's just the reality of it. It's a tough, tough time to be in the market. And that doesn't mean, like, I think there's still some artists out there who will do okay. And they'll be better off as a result, because I can sell directly to clients. I can release a print that everybody wants, you know. And they have enough money to get them through 6 months.
But do you also see any opportunities in the whole situation? I mean, let's stick to the art part. Okay. Yeah, I mean, because that, yeah, the other discussion is like, that's what we, I mean, I totally agree with you that we're in a luxury segment, and that was the same case in 2008. Nobody needed to buy it anymore when they don't have money anymore and are out of jobs. And it's totally understandable that we're at the forefront of the fall, of the demise in a way. But we've, you know, so we recover and recover differently. But that leads me to the point, do you see any opportunities that
I think there'll
more?
Oh, I mean, I think that it should be interesting to see what people do. I think they're going to do more creative things online. I see people doing that now. I think people right now are less focused on money, which is something you said, but when it comes back, they're going to be greedy again. But I think people are going to get really creative. We're going to see people get really creative. Personally, I'm not thinking about those things too much because I'm still running my business. So like I see a lot of my friends are like, I'm going to make a video of me dancing in the living room, or I'm going to whatever. That's great. Well, I'm still fucking working. All right. So like, I don't have time. I'm not thinking about that. I'm worried about the world. I'm worried about my family, you know, but I'm still working. So, you know, artists are going to do probably some really cool creative things that have nothing to do with finance that are going to come out. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, it should be interesting. There's definitely going to be a silver lining in this, but you just got to look for it. There's a silver lining in this. In a lot of ways, it could be that people are thinking different. Could be that people are less focused on money. It could be that people are coming together more and they're back communicating with each other in a real way about important things and not about, like, you know, things that aren't as important. That's a big problem we have in the world, if you ask me. Everyone's on their phone all the time. I mean, we're Generation X, so we're like a little bit different than the millennials, but. And you and I, like, we're pretty, like, grounded, spiritual people. And it's the reason we get along so well, because we could talk about these things. But, like, at the end of the day, we know it's not that important. It's, like, what's important? Our family, our friends, our health. So, I mean, I think there could be some, you know, art for the sake of art. We could see a lot of that. That has nothing to do with the economy and nothing to do with making money. And maybe a lot of new ideas where people are going to have to, everyone's being forced to think differently. And if you're creative, you have to come up with some other way to sort of like express yourself. So I think definitely something interesting is going to come. Everything's going to be like post-coronavirus. Everything's going to be like about post-coronavirus, you know, and when it's gone, it's done. And it's too soon to say, but yeah, I think I'm sure you're already thinking about stuff you're going to do. Me, I'm not thinking about any of that. I'm thinking about, how am I going to pay my bills? And I actually think this is a good time for me to work, to be honest with you. You know, for me, I like my job is different. So I'm like, now I have to find where the market is right now and go to that, generate income. And, you know, and that's that.
Well, I'm still working a lot, as I said, maybe more now to get all these things in place. But 90% of my worries are with my family and the world and the situation. I'm not known to get in panic at all easily. I know this is a terrible situation, especially for everyone that is impacted, not just, I mean, outside of everyone that's sick and, you know, sort of get seriously sick. It's for everybody. You mentioned the barkeepers and bartenders, people who are on hourly jobs and stuff like that. That's going to be a big impact, but mainly now I'm focusing on my family and the life, and I'm I'm 100% sure that that it's going to be interesting once this is over. It will be over. It's not the end of the world. It's also not. Yeah, it's just something. I mean, what can you do?
Yeah, one of the things I think is kind of cool about this, and I was thinking about this, is like this is a way that, not to sound all corny, but it unites all people in the world because it's affecting everybody in the world. And we're all in this together no matter what, no matter if you're have a different religion, you're a complete like racist or who knows, whatever, you know, like we're one country hates another country. It doesn't matter. We're all in this together. And so I think that's kind of cool. We're all kind of like locked in together as human beings. We're on the same in the same place in a lot of ways. Although people who are in third world countries don't have these sort of resources that we have, or you know, developing countries don't have the sort of resources we have, or you know, countries that are people are really poor. People who are just poor in your own countries they're at greater risk. So that kind of sucks, but. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with this. But, you know, I was going to say, you know, I don't know about you, but this is giving me more time to – I've been exercising more. So I think some other people are doing that too. And I've seen cool things like friends I know are like – a friend of mine who's like a trainer. She's like, I'm doing free classes online every day at 8:45. So people, you want to join, log in. People are doing classes. Mm-hmm. People are doing all sorts of interesting things.
Yeah. Sort of. Yeah, that is also happening.
Connect with each other, which I think is really cool. And I'm like, this is cool. And I'm like, you know what? I may be stuck in my house, but I can FaceTime people. So like,
We're pretty well set up for this. Yeah, I agree.
There's a lot of pluses.
Yeah, it's also even though Emmanuel Macron speaks about war, it's not a war that we have to go in and die as soldiers on the front or on the home front in bombardments. But it's something where we sit in home and try to, you know, make the best out of it for a certain amount of time. But, you know, what you said earlier, for you, nothing changes. For me, things might change. You know, right now, for what changed for me mostly is that I'm not – there are a couple of people who say, well, great, I get some, especially in the arts community, they say, oh, I got some time to work on these paintings and stuff like that. And I'm in solitude anyway. For me, you know, my struggle with focusing on writing my autobiography and doing my work more, this is actually taking me away from that a little bit more because I have to take care of the business that was actually running at the side and which Melvin was handling and which was, okay, now I have to get back into that much more. And there's one point, and because in our conversations, even though this is not part of the off the records series that we're doing necessarily, but we're always very open and honest. And so here's what I'm thinking sometimes. I've gone through a very harsh crisis in 2000, between 2008, although 2008-09 it was good, but I'm writing my autobiography. I'm currently in the year 2010, that is when I had to let go of my last staff member here because it was terrible financial situation for a gallery like Helium Cowboy at that point. I went through that struggle. I came out strong. I stronger maybe, different, but stronger, different concept, all these things. I'm not really sure if I want to go through that again. And so for me, it might also mean that I will... yeah, who knows what's happening, but these are things that I'm thinking about too, because I'm not, you know, maybe when I'm getting out of this, all I'm doing is writing my book and making artwork. So that would be not the worst, but it would change things, you know. Maybe I'm still doing the podcast though. But, you know, right now it looks like we're, you know, sort of, I mean, you know, Melvin is highly motivated too, so, I mean, he would kick my ass if I'd say, oh, let's just close shop.
Well, you know, but we've already been through, like I say, like I've been transitioning all year, a couple years now. So it's kind of like, okay, whatever, you know, and it could be a lot worse. And it's a lot worse for a lot of other people. So I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my life isn't really changing. I can't say it's changing that much that I can tell, because all I do is sit in front of a computer and work. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. And at home. It's hard not to be able to go out and be around people because I'm a very social person. But you know, who knows? It's too soon to say.
So what you could do, actually, you could actually do online classes on, because you're an experienced home office worker. You, to all those people who think home office is cool, you know, you can make some classes. What do you do when you go nuts in your own four walls, well, you know, without
Corona? About for a while now. That's funny. No, well, for a while now, I had looked into this, but I'm not ready to do this yet. But I thought about, and it's, you know, I'm going to say this online and people might be like, hey, I thought about being a consultant to artists, basically doing what I'm doing with you here. You know, like they get on a headset and we talk, you know, and I give people direct advice. I was thinking about doing this over a year ago. It is a lot of work, though, to organize it properly. And I've sort of had that in the back of my head to do, not so much because it's a good moneymaker, which it could be, but because I would enjoy it because I'm by myself all the time, you know. So, you know, I thought about doing that. I just haven't done it. So I guess somebody's interested in that. Maybe I wouldn't be opposed to doing that, doing consult, you know, basically be like, here's an hour of time. Ask me what you want. And I thought about being like, okay, you want me to set up a whole, I could also like with artists go like, okay, we'll do 6 weeks and I'll help you create a plan. Cause it's, you can't, it's different for every artist. Be like, what is it you want? And they're like, well, I want this. So for each artist, you're going to set something up differently. And that's what I did for a living with the gallery, essentially. And so I have the skill and I understand the market to an extent that I could be very helpful to people. I just haven't gone down that route, because not for nothing, I've been doing okay. Just mostly selling secondary market. Not that I wouldn't do this. I would just kind of do it for fun, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but you said just a couple of minutes ago, you said it's a transition phase that is lasting on for a while now. And these are the things that, you know, come up during those things. I was just, you know, yes, I was seeing you drinking coffee all the time, and because of the time difference.
And you're drinking beer.
I just opened an early beer. And I just figured out that this is something that is actually already affecting my my personal life, because, you know, this is Kervida Kreativbrauerei, the brewery that I'm partnering with in regards to. I do all their designs. We're good friends. I do their logos, their labels and stuff like that. They because I don't have any events at the gallery right now, they're not delivering to me anymore at the moment. So this might actually be one of the last... Yeah, with the prototypes I might be drinking. They're actually in a terrible situation too. So shout out to those guys. You know, they have probably stopped production. They have problems delivering. They're also in a way in the luxury segment with craft beer, because their beer is simply more expensive. So see how they get through. I know that they have a daily struggle and trying to come up with new ideas to also to support. To support the gastronomy, which is highly affected right now. This is their these are the people that sell for them, stuff like that. So it's it's tough for them as well. So maybe me drinking a beer of theirs during this podcast might help them, the online sales. Well, I don't know. Maybe we can pack a painting onto all these boxes then, you know, find the creative ways to give people beer and art.
You know, it's funny you should bring that up, because I have two really good friends that own a brewery. It's called Wayfinder Beer in Portland, Oregon. And it's a restaurant, and they also own a bunch of bars, and they own a chain of pizza places called Sizzle Pie. So they've had to lay off like 100 people. And they're kind of going through this same thing. They're like, you know, how are they going to deliver their beer? Who's going to buy, you know, whatever. They're dealing with all that, and they're having to come up with different solutions. And they had to lay off all these people. And Portland's a service industry, so people are getting hit. And so, like, I completely relate to that. You know, it's you know, the thing is, everyone's getting hit. Every business is getting hit. So I could name a half a dozen people I can think of off the top of my head. Like, I'm like, how you doing? Are you okay? Like, a friend of mine owns, like, an acupuncture/massage center. And she's essentially closed, just taking some clients doing acupuncture, and she has a lot of people who work for her, and they're like out of work now because people aren't coming in to get massages and facial, whatever, you know? And, you know, that's one thing I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
All right, Jonathan. Can we end on a positive note somehow? Well, the beer is great. Still,
my coffee's good. Be safe and be well. It's not as bad as you think it is. Have perspective. I mean, listen, 130 years ago, people didn't even have running water and electricity and all this stuff. Just
130 years ago, we'd all be dead already.
Maybe. I'm just thinking about my grandparents when they were growing up, like what they, how their lives were. They didn't have all these.
No, from life expectancy alone, yeah. Jonathan, you and I would be dead. You mentioned our age before.
We've exceeded that. I'm saying is like things aren't that bad. I mean, it sucks. You got to stay in. It sucks that maybe, you know, as long as you can feed yourself, you're going to be okay. It's and you know, eventually this is all going to turn around. But in the same time.
And just.
What's that?
Sorry. And just imagine when this is over, how good the hugs will feel that That's we give right. to the people that we couldn't see in such
That's
a long
right.
time.
Maybe I'll, when this is all over, maybe I'll take a trip through Europe and I'll come visit you.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, I could use a hug from you for, you know, after what, many years?
Yeah, I've been to Germany. I have to go to Italy. I got to visit some people. Yeah. Just do a little tour. All right. Yeah, man.
Okay. Right. So, Jonathan, thank you for this. And as always.
Yeah, I just say, everyone, be well, be safe, stay safe. Take care of yourself, love each other, and choose.
Well, thank you for listening today. I will be back with more talks shortly. If you have any questions for me or my guests, I'm happy to hear them all. Just send me a mail to hello@heliumtalk.com or a direct message on my Instagram @heliumcowboy. Stay safe and healthy and take good care of everyone around you. Yeah.